Consider this next half hour as something of a circuit breaker, as a chance to pause and reflect and perhaps understand, because things are changing. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Monday today, the 9th day of March. Everybody, good as always to have you along. You know, much as stock markets have built-in circuit breakers to put a stop to panic selling and recalibrate the mood, which, by the way, happened today not long after the open when the S&P 500 hit 7% on the downside, so too will we use the program today to recalibrate the mood, to explain why all of a sudden the economic realities of the coronavirus seem to have gotten oh so much more real. To start us off, economist Megan Green from the Harvard Kennedy School. Megan, it's good to have you back on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Why, as best you can figure out, did the bottom seemingly fall out today? What happened?
So I think it was a confluence of two things, mainly. One is that northern Italy pretty much shut down. So it just fed the idea that even if new cases are slowing down within China, they're actually accelerating outside of China. And that's a big deal. And then the second issue actually isn't directly related to the coronavirus. It's more related to the OPEC meeting on Friday, where Saudi and Russia decided to flood the market with oil. And so oil prices have fallen pretty precipitously. And that creates huge credit problems for a lot of companies related to the energy industry, which are actually pretty highly leveraged and are generally rated, just above junk level. And right. So if you start seeing defaults, then they'll be downgraded and there will be forced selling. So that's also provided a lot of drama today.
Right. Highly leveraged, lots of borrowing. More on oil coming up from Scott Tong in a minute. Let me ask you about a word you use, though. Things are accelerating outside China. Speaking broadly, are you surprised at the speed with which this whole thing has come to this moment?
So I'm not, just given how incredibly interconnected the world is, both in terms of global supply chains, but also more importantly, in this case, in terms of people traveling around. And I think that China really did great work in buying the rest of us time, in that they had really draconian measures to try to keep people in their own towns, in their own buildings. It's much more than most people realize. In addition to quarantining and social distancing, you know, there's an app that the government runs where you can see who has coronavirus. So that, you know, enforces social distancing. So China bought us a lot of time, and a lot of us have completely squandered it, most of all the U.S. So our response to this crisis has been pretty embarrassing, I think, for a developed country with a highly competent health system.
How much of that American response contributes to what I perceive to be the changing nature of this crisis? It's going from a supply shock, which we talked about when Apple had its earnings warning, to now people worried about demand shock and the credit markets and all of that.
That's right. So the demand shock, I think we're all really worried about, and rightly so, but we don't actually have any data that's suggesting it's happened. So the demand shock we know is coming out of China, right? The second largest economy in the entire world was at a standstill for at least 5 weeks. But for the U.S., the demand shock at home, it's just perceived at this point, right? It involves people not going out to dinner and not going out and spending. And we can certainly get there. But at the moment, I think it's just concern about it. We're not getting any data that's suggesting that that's the case, really. It's just something that seems like it might be coming. And I think it's absolutely reasonable for us to worry about this. And then that's feeding over into the financial markets, of course, as confidence has been bled from them. And so you've seen these huge moves over the past couple days.
If, and let's stress that this is a big if, but if we do turn into a recession in this economy, given that the underlying fundamentals, as politicians like to say, were strong, right? The labor market's strong, consumers are really confident. What might a recovery look like on the other end of this thing?
So it depends entirely on epidemiology, and none of us really have answers there. So it really depends on how far this virus spreads. If the virus is eventually contained and we have inappropriate policy response with some fiscal stimulus, you know, a year from now that we might remember this entire experience, but, you know, we'll have forgotten about the economic implications of it, right? So it could just be transitive. We saw that with the SARS virus, for example. There was a big drop off in demand, and then, you know, it picked up pretty immediately once the virus was contained. So that could be the case here, but if it actually is spread further and is more deadly, then, you know, of course, we might not get a V-shaped recovery. It might be much more gradual and require more policy intervention.
Right. Megan Green, an economist, also a senior fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School. Megan, thanks a lot. I really appreciate your time and your insights.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Also, just because I'm a history guy, this little tidbit. Today is the 11th anniversary of the bull market that maybe seems to be in some peril today, some jeopardy. March the 9th, 2009, the S&P 500 closed at 676. Today on the S&P 2746, a nice gain, but off 7.6% on the day. All the gory details when we do the numbers. All right, as promised, oil. There was a 1-2 punch in general confidence today, as Megan was talking about, Italy and oil. There was also, within the oil market itself, a 1-2 punch of its own, a double black swan, at least one oil analyst called it. Already battered by soft demand due to the coronavirus, oil prices got slammed when Saudi Arabia and Russia got into a price war over the weekend. So, as Megan said, crude prices collapsed today off almost 20%. And as Marketplace's Scott Tong reports, those two countries, Saudi Arabia and Russia, are taking aim at West Texas oil drillers, and they are hurting.
The new kid on the oil block the past decade has been the U.S., drilling and fracking and stealing customers from the Saudis and the Russians. And it was the Russians who figured, enough. Let's flood the market, collapse prices, and see who survives, says Christopher Page at Rystad Energy.
The trend underway has been that U.S. production has been increasing and that Russia and Saudi Arabia have needed to cut production to accommodate that. And so I think that the Russians see this as their opportunity to put some shale producers out of business.
Those shale producers are American firms with high costs that lose money at today's prices. Some already halted activity over the weekend. And at the research firm Infill Thinking, founder Joseph Tripke expects drill rigs to be idled, companies to fail, and workers to lose jobs. That's on top of 15,000 layoffs last year.
There comes a point in every oil field market cycle where things get Darwinian, and in this down cycle, that time is now.
In the last price war of 2015, many American oil companies got leaner and meaner and survived. But today, selling prices are even lower, and Wall Street lenders and investors are no longer there to help.
That's gone today.
Ann Fox is the CEO of Nine Energy Service in Houston.
So this is the real, you know, capital discipline. This is live within your cash flows and that's it. There's no access to either of those markets.
How bloody this gets depends on how long crude prices stay in the basement. Russia and Saudi Arabia could change their minds and cut supply, bringing prices back. But if the price war goes on more than a year, watch out. Energy economist Ed Herz teaches at the University of Houston.
The Saudi strategy is to go ahead with a price war until the other members of OPEC cry uncle. If the virus begins to meet up with some of the really dire predictions, then we will have a global recession.
By one estimate, U.S. oil production could fall 25% over 2 years, drilling a hole in the story of American energy dominance. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Megan Green was also alluding to the debt and credit markets a little bit when we were talking, which honestly is fine with us because we love the bond market. It gives us a good sense of where the economy is going. And in a crisis like this one, still developing though it is clear investors want safety. And there ain't nothing more safe than American government debt, treasury bonds. So people are buying those bonds, which is driving their yields way, way down, lower, in fact, even than during the financial crisis when people really wanted safety. So, are we looking at 2008 here, or has something else changed? Marketplace's Amy Scott has that one.
The yield on the 10-year Treasury note closed today under 0.6%. That's lower than it got during the financial crisis, but Guy Lebas, chief fixed income strategist at Janney Montgomery Scott, says it's the magnitude of the drop that matters.
If you go back to the financial crisis, interest rates fell from, call it, 5% down to 2% in roughly a 6-month period. So, you know, that, I think, shows you how deep the financial crisis fear was.
There's another big difference in the bond market today. Marco Rossi teaches finance at Texas A&M. He says the Fed's response to the financial crisis, buying up long-term bonds to push down interest rates, has led investors to expect rates to stay low. And today's yields reflect those expectations.
Back in 2008, that approach to monetary policy had not yet been tried. And now we are in this new environment. And we know that the Fed can do that and will intensify that.
A third factor at play is a little more complicated, but bear with me. Josh Younger is a managing director at J.P. Morgan. He says when interest rates fall quickly, a lot of homeowners refinance their mortgages to take advantage of lower rates. That means banks and other investors that were betting on getting interest payments for decades are getting paid much more quickly than they expected. So Younger says they need other long-term investments.
So what's an asset that I can add that has duration and low credit risk in a very uncertain environment? That's treasuries.
If that sounds like a vicious cycle, it is. Because, of course, the more demand for treasuries, the lower the yields get, and the more people want to refinance. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
A word here about consumers, the linchpin, as we are, of this economy. Spending by or on behalf of consumers is something like 70% of all of this country's economic activity, which is all well and good when consumers are feeling good, when we're confident in spending money. But the American consumer is fickle, right? Mercurial, one could say. So what happens if this crisis gets worse? That confidence goes away. How do we get it back? Marketplace's Jasmine Garz is on that one.
Behavioral economist Peter Atwater from William & Mary compares consumer confidence to a tower made of Legos. And he says coronavirus has shattered it.
It takes a very long time to build it up. It's inherently very fragile.
And it takes an even longer time to rebuild it. It's easier to scare people away from public spaces than it is to get them to come back. Economist Howard Chernick is the author of Resilient City, The Economic Impact of 9/11. He says after the attacks, the travel and leisure industry took the first big hits. People didn't feel safe in public spaces.
Las Vegas, which is a very tourist-dependent city, basically shut down.
Chernick sees some similarities, and he says once this crisis blows over, it could take the leisure industry quite a while to get back on its feet, at least another year. John Gerner is the managing director of Leisure Business Advisors. They specialize in theme parks. He held this position during and after 9/11. What he learned is in order to get people back out, companies need to be transparent.
We can't talk down to our guests. We have to work with them and essentially say, look, this is what we're doing, and we're going to need you, the guests, also to do your share.
Meaning consumers also play a part in making it safe to go back out there by taking the recommended precautions, like staying home when they're sick and washing their hands often. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
Coming up,
we've seen those kind of skyrocket.
The bicycle industry in the time of COVID-19. But first, let's do the numbers. We need wah-wah-year wah-wahs. That's about all I can say about that. The Dow Industrial is down 2,013 points, 7.79%, 23,851. The NASDAQ tumbled 624 points, 7.29%, finished at 7950. The S&P 500 off 255 points, 7.5%, 27.46. So, how about some energy companies, huh? Saudi Aramco slipped 5.5% today. ExxonMobil down more than 12%. Chevron declined 15.33%. So let's do cruise ships. How about that, right? Carnival dropped more than 19% today. Royal Caribbean fell more than 25%. Amy was talking about bonds. 10-year at 0.54 was the close. The 30-year, bond money for 30 years. The government can do that at 1% even. You're listening to Marketplace. Listen up, folks. This is your last chance to get our new Marketplace t-shirt for a donation of just $30. Whether you're giving for the first time or renewing your support, you don't want to miss this limited time deal, which ends this week. Head over to Marketplace.org to support news you trust and get this t-shirt as a special thank you. Once again, Marketplace.org, and thanks.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail. Or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. On the podcast How I Built This, host Guy Raz talks to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt, failure, and how they were able to overcome setbacks on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. Listen early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more business content like this, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. Megan Green was talking about a demand shock up at the top of the program. Well, what happens if and or when people just stop buying stuff, right? That's what that means. We are a long ways from that happening in a big way, but there are some indicators it's coming. Events and gatherings are being canceled, most notably this past Friday, South by Southwest, the film, music, and technology conference that happens down in Austin, Texas every March. And as Marketplace's Andy Euler reports, there is going to be some trickle-down from that cancellation.
At a graphic design shop in West Austin called Graphics Guys, the owner Byron Mowry is running a machine that cuts some promotional material for a new Richard Linklater movie. Mowry's business wraps vehicles and walls with promos. It produces and installs banner displays on buildings. He says losing the business from South by Southwest, well,
it's tough, man. It sucks. Really sucks. I don't know how else to put it.
Mowry says for his business, the 10 days of the festival are like Black Friday and Christmas rolled together. It can float him for at least a few months if things slow down in the summer.
We stand to not write up $75,000 in business just for this month based on South By, which is huge for us. We normally double, triple, sometimes have quadrupled our monthly net based just on South By.
Mowry says he thinks he'll be able to withstand the hit because he has a pretty low overhead and he serves a lot of local businesses that he'll now prioritize with South By out of the way. Across town at the HK Austin Hostel, owner Brent Underwood isn't so sure his business is going to survive. He says for months, the hostel was booked up in advance. Then on Friday, within hours of the cancellation announcement, 90% of the bookings had disappeared. Underwood says that doesn't mean he just can't afford a vacation this year.
It's more like, I don't know how we're going to pay the property taxes this year because of the loss of income. And so it's a pretty substantial loss.
He took a deposit when guest booked, but he refunded 100% of the booking because of the circumstances. He says this has him thinking about making the deposit non-refundable in the future. Many businesses in Austin are now looking at their contracts and terms and conditions. There was speculation that the corporation running South by Southwest would be able to collect insurance money because the city declared a local state of emergency. But now it appears the coronavirus outbreak might not be covered. Lauren Spahn, an entertainment lawyer in Nashville, says contracts between production companies, venues, and artists are all different.
So a lot of times something like this would fall under what we call the force majeure provision. If these things happen, meaning things that are typically outside of the control of either party, that you have the right to cancel the contract.
But she says she doesn't think many of these contract disputes will end up in court because that could hurt business relationships in the long term. For now, businesses in Austin are just trying to get through March. Community organizations have arranged makeshift music and food events and even a couple of online fundraisers to help cushion the blow. Many businesses here face a tough call in the weeks ahead. Take out a loan to keep things afloat, or just skip rent this month and risk eviction. In Austin, Texas, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Since the outbreak of the novel coronavirus stopped a lot of Chinese manufacturing, a whole bunch of American businesses are still waiting for their products to arrive stateside. One of those companies is State Bicycle out of Tempe, Arizona. We have talked to co-founder Mehdi Farsi a couple of times in the past year and a half or so, mostly about the trade war and what that has meant to him. We called him back up to ask him about his supply chain in the age of COVID-19. Here you go.
We're seeing a huge backlog bringing containers over. We've seen those kind of skyrocket just because there's a huge demand and only so many freight ships coming over. So orders that we placed in November, December, scheduled for, March 1st delivery, that stuff was almost done. It didn't ship until around, this past week. We also had some new product releases that were kind of planned for April around certain trade shows. Not only are those products delayed, but we just found out that one of our biggest trade shows in the U.S. actually just got canceled. That's going to, unfortunately, affect our business. They have a bicycle leadership conference for people in the industry, but they also have like a great expo and races. So it's affecting like a lot of people in the cycling world.
Mehdi Farsi there. He's the co-founder of the State Bicycle Company in Tempe, Arizona, if you're looking for a new bike. Some, with the emphasis here on the word some, parts of the Chinese economy have started to open back up. But effectively, people are still obliged to stay home, which means that for Marketplace's Jennifer Pack, who has been staring at a whole lot of empty streets and empty shopping malls for the better part of a month now, her window to the world has been through good old-fashioned radio. This is part of what she's hearing in Shanghai.
On Shanghai's radio, there's no hotter topic than food delivery workers. Normally, they just make life work in the city of 24 million. But now, many Shanghai residents see them more as potential carriers of the COVID-19 virus, a concern voiced on this cooking show hosted by Yingzi.
During this outbreak, a lot of you have asked whether it's safe to get food delivery.
Yingzi has reached out to one of China's biggest food delivery app, Ele.me. Its spokesperson is Zhang Xiaojia. She says, don't worry.
Our delivery guys disinfect their food boxes daily. They wear face masks and check for fever. Restaurant staff are also checked for fever before handling your food.
Plus, she says there's no physical contact with customers, as shown in an ad for a property rental firm. The delivery guy sets the food by the door. Wait till I leave and then get the food, he tells the resident. She's under a mandatory self-quarantine by her neighborhood committee for 14 days, during which the rental firm says it will provide tenants with hotel-like service. Safety measures like self-quarantine and travel restrictions between provinces mean many people have not returned to work yet. And some employees were asking on this radio chat show whether they still had a job.
During this critical period, companies cannot randomly fire employees.
That's You Mingjian, a member of the CPPCC, the communist government's top advisory body. But can workers have their wages cut, asked the show host. The short answer is yes, but You Mingjian urges companies to find other ways first.
They can shift work and rest days around or cut down work hours.
We're China's number one hit music station. Hits FM.
Concerns about job security means consumption might be way down for a while. But China is still an important market. American artists like Katy Perry have sent messages of support.
Hi everyone in China, it's Katy Perry. I just wanted to send a message to you to let you know that we are all with you.
She's had trouble getting permission to perform in China, but her songs are widely available on music streaming platforms here. There is an effort to ease people's anxieties, like how many basic supplies should people stock up on? 30% more than normal, says this psychologist in a public service announcement.
If you exceed 30%, the more you hoard, the more panicked you'll be.
There's no escaping the main topic here, the virus outbreak, whether the shows are supposed to be about music, traffic, or home renovations. Here's Chen Yi and Jianan on Great Sports Radio.
One of our topics today is what type of hairstyles do you prefer? But not many listeners have responded.
Because it's not the right time. I haven't cut my hair since the Lunar New Year.
Yeah, me too. I don't even know where I can get my hair cut.
A lot of hair salons are still closed. Chinese officials say, be patient. Then, a reminder to people to keep their immune system strong. Stay fit with the 9th edition of the People's Radio Calisthenics. From my home in Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, and maybe this has always been there, but I just spotted it today. A little coronavirus PSA from Apple, because you can wash your hands until the cows come home, people, but then you go and pick up your phone, and ew, right? It's filthy. So, from Apple, this guidance, which one assumes applies to non-Apple phone users as well. Using a 70% isopropyl alcohol wipe or Clorox disinfecting wipes, the company says, you may gently wipe the hard, non-porous surfaces of your Apple product, such as the display, keyboard, or other exterior surfaces. Do not use bleach. Avoid getting moisture in any opening, and don't submerge your Apple product in any cleaning agents. Also, and this is me, not Apple, wash your hands. All right, we got to go. These are the numbers. The Dow off 2,013 points, 7.7%. The NASDAQ off 624, that is 7.2%. S&P 500 lost 225 points, 7.6%. Our daily production team includes Bridget Bodner, Andy Corbin, Maria Hollenhorst, Sean McHenry, Daisy Palacios, and Bennett Purser. Eliza Mills is our special projects producer. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.